You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
First of all, I've got a bag here. Happens to be of the New York Giants. But hey, the Penguins won the Stanley Cup. That's really cool. Yeah, okay. So I'm excited about that. I am. I'll take the Flyers, too. Either one. But I just said the Penguins. He booed the Penguins. Please. Okay. All right. So I've got a bag here. Anyway, this doesn't matter. What matters is what's inside. And I've got shoes in here. And in this bag, I've got all sorts of shoes. These are not all my shoes, just to clarify a few things. Is that yours? Oh, okay. You didn't even know. and this one? Okay, yeah. So I've got a whole bunch of shoes here. And shoes play a significant role in your life. And you probably don't realize this. But your shoes are identifying markers of you. And just to clarify that, I want to show a short clip here from the TV show Sherlock, BBC Sherlock, with Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman. And this was back like when they weren't even like, I don't know, Khan and The Hobbit. But back in the day, and it's a really good show. If you haven't watched it, it's really, really good. But so here's a scene where Sherlock, who is looking into the microscope, and you'll see Watson kind of working his way around there, and then there's a lab assistant, and he's talking about shoes, because they found at a crime scene a pair of shoes. And this pair of shoes will identify a few things. So go ahead and watch. So he discovers that the fifth element that was on the shoe was a glycerol molecule, which ends up being a sugar. And he finds out that this kidnapper had kidnapped people and put them in an old chocolate factory where they actually had plants out front. And so he used all the different elements, the chalk, the asphalt, the brick dust, to determine that this is where the kidnapper had this this person that he had kidnapped. And the point being that he said the shoes, if you picked up at the beginning there, your shoes are like a passport. They tell everywhere you've been. And so as you look at these shoes, I wonder if you look in, you might see that this shoe has, I don't know, probably some beach sand perhaps, or maybe some trail dust, I don't know. This shoe probably has, I don't know, pretty girly stuff on it. And this shoe definitely looks like it's been out, maybe walking a trail, maybe doing some biking, maybe doing some work. So you might see some different things there from where it's been. This shoe looks like you'll probably maybe find some wood, something fancy, hardwood flooring underneath it. Maybe a little bit of a like a shellac. What do you call that? Like a, you know, that's good enough. So you might see that on this shoe. I don't think she got any of my shoes. All right, this shoe, you know, here's a boot, so you'll probably find stuff related to boots, maybe some mud, maybe some animal refuse. This is fancy. You might find the 1990s stuck to the bottom of this. This clog, you know, this. You might find something Swedish here or Denmarkian or wherever clogs come from. I don't know if you look at the bottom. It looks like you find pieces of hammock, maybe some sand. It looks like something people might wear in just a casual kind of summery day. This one you'll find all sorts of everything because you'll probably find sweat on the bottom of the shoes, maybe a little saliva. Boys' shoes tend to have all sorts of things that don't belong in places. So you might find that on that shoe. Here's another sneaker. So this, there's probably going to be some asphalt, some paint, maybe some basketball rubber, something for maybe track surface. Because the point is, and I could go on and on and on, but I'm not going to. The point is that all of these shoes pick up a piece of everywhere they've been. And of course, Sherlock and his awesome Sherlockianness was able to use that to find a kidnapper. And when you think about your shoes, it's true. And I actually, depending on your background, your upbringing, you know, one of the things, and I noticed this yesterday, as a matter of fact, when you walk into a home, it may be your practice to take off your shoes when you walk into a home. And the reason you may be doing that is either you're Japanese. That might be one reason, because that's just a cultural thing. But it also might be so that you don't track everything that you've been in all over your house. You know, and we have these kind of rules, like don't put your feet on the furniture. Why? Because we don't want whatever was on your shoes on our couch. Don't put your feet on the table. Why? Because we don't want whatever you were stepping in to be on our table. Because your shoes pick up a little piece of everywhere you've been. And as we talk today and do the second hack, the second parenting hack for this Life Hack series, I want you to understand that your kids are just like your shoes. Because they pick up a little piece of everywhere that you have been. As parents, everything that we do, every way we act, every word we say, every attitude, all of these things, we might think, oh, it's not a big deal. But your kids are picking up little pieces of that. And so the issue for us as parents, if you are, and again, this is something we said throughout the series, you know, each week kind of has some unique, specific properties. But what we're talking about today can apply to anybody in this room. You don't have to say, oh, well, I'm a parent, so this doesn't matter. No, it does, because the people that are following you, whether that is your little brothers and sisters, whether that is your coworkers, whether that's the people at your school, the people in your neighborhood, people around you, when they spend time with you, are picking up little pieces of you. And the question is, what do you want to leave behind? What do you want them to pick up? And so the point is for today is try this parenting hack. We already did a parenting hack a couple of weeks ago. This is the second one. Try this parenting hack. Be the example of loving Jesus. Because if the fact is, no matter what you do, your shoes are picking up everywhere you've been, and no matter what you do, your children are picking up a little piece of you, why don't we make sure that we're leaving pieces that matter? That we're leaving little tiny pieces of Jesus that they are picking up and they are absorbing? Because the example of us as parents, this isn't about here's six techniques of how to be a better parent. This is about what we need to do, who we need to be as parents. And that is the example of loving Jesus more so than just the words. The words are fine. You can say the words are good, the words matter. But if you're not backing it up with an example, I guarantee they're picking up more from your example than they are from your words. So, I want to look at this passage in Genesis chapter 22, and it is a long passage. It's probably a familiar passage to you if you have been in church for any length of time. The lights will come on. I'm going to read through the whole thing and then come back and kind of break it down here. So, we're in Genesis 22, and we'll be here for a long time. So, if you have the YouVersion app, feel free to go to Genesis, tap 22, and follow along with me beginning in verse 1. And again, I'm going to read through it quickly so that we can kind of break it down in pieces. But I want to look at this guy named Abraham. And how Abraham, who was the, you know, he is the father of the nation of Israel. He was like the man. He was the founder, if you will. Now, granted, God is the founder, but he was sort of the, he was the central point. He was the main figure. He would be the George Washington is to America what Abraham, not Lincoln, but Abraham is to Israel, kind of the beginning, the inception. And so here's a little story. Again, if you grew up in church, you probably have heard this, but I want to look at a few things about it. So it says, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, here I am, he replied. Then God said, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place that God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we'll come back to you. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, Father,
yes, my son, Abraham replied.
The fire and the wood are here, Isaac said, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham!
Here I am, he replied.
Do not lay a hand on the boy, he said. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. Now, as we look at this Abraham guy, as this figure, as this example of, you know, the ultimate pinnacle of what it means to be a Jewish person, is talking about Abraham. He was an example to his son, and to their son, and to their son, and it continued on for generations and generations. But as a father, as a parent, he was an example. And he realized, perhaps intentionally, perhaps unintentionally, maybe a little bit of both, that Isaac, his son, was picking up pieces of him everywhere he went. And so there are some things here that Abraham was an example of. He was an apparent example. Parent. Okay. Anyway, the first thing we see is that Abraham was an example of immediate obedience. Abraham was an example of immediate obedience. Because as a father, as this man who was the head of what was to be this nation, he wasn't partially obedient. He wasn't delayed obedient. He was immediately obedient. He didn't make excuses. He didn't change his mind. He didn't talk his way out of it. He didn't rationalize it. He obeyed God right away. And that's what we see there in the first part of Genesis chapter 22. It says, sometime later, God tested Abraham, which by the word tested means, it doesn't mean God was trying to get Abraham to sin. It actually means to refine. It's what we do with gold, with things. We want to burn off the impurities. We want to get rid of the extra junk. And so it's tested. And that's what this word means. So please, that's a very important thing to understand. People are like, oh, did God make Abraham sin? No. He was trying to refine his faith, to grow him to be more like himself. So he says to Abraham, here I am. Or he says, yeah, God tested him. He said, Abraham, and Abraham says, here I am. Then God said, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Now I need to clarify a few things. A little bit earlier here, a few chapters earlier, Abraham, by the way, is old. He's an old man. And God comes to this old man and says, Abraham, and by the way, this old man, let me back up again, this old man and his wife have no children. They have no kids. So there's an old man, and at the point where he ends up having his son, he's around 100 or more. But God comes to him and says, look, Abraham, I am going to make your name great, and out of you, one of your descendants will become a huge nation, meaning there are going to be lots of little Abrahams running around, and they're going to have lots of little Abrahams, and it's going to be a gigantic nation, not just a big family. I mean, imagine that. We talk about people having big families, but has anybody ever said, like, oh, they got like a nation over there? That's what God said to Abraham, is this old man who didn't have any kids. And so God provides some miraculous things, and basically his wife, Sarah, ends up having a son. And that son's name is Isaac. And so Abraham now, as an older man, has one son. And God says to this Abraham guy, this follower of God, this one that was willing to submit to God and follow him, God says to him, take your son, Now, Abraham, right away, God could have stopped there and said, oh, well, my son, since I have one, it's probably Isaac. And then God goes on and says, your only son. And the Hebrew word here has the idea of, like, he's making a point that this is all you got. This is it. He is the special one because there ain't nobody else. So God says, take your son, your only son, the one whom you love, just to clarify, because, you know, as opposed to all the other sons that you don't have that you don't love, the one whom you love. So God is just kind of reinforcing, like, that Abraham, we're talking about your son, Isaac. Yeah. We're talking to Abraham saying about your son, Isaac, your only son. Oh, by the way, the son that you love because you finally had a son. His name's Isaac, just in case you weren't sure which son I was talking about. And then he says, and go to the region of Moriah. So, okay, no problem. We can go. And then he says, sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. And the word sacrifice means that. It means a burnt offering. The word actually means to rise up, the idea of smoke rising up and filling, you know, filling the air. And so this wasn't a metaphor. This wasn't a vague statement. This wasn't like, okay, just, you know, show up. He says, sacrifice your son as a burnt offering. So God says to this man, you've only got one kid. I promised you that I'm going to make you into a great nation, but I want you to kill your one child. I want you to sacrifice him to me as an act of worship. And so here's what happens, right? So Abraham then thinks about it and says, you know what? God didn't really mean that. He said, I'm going to pray about it, God, and I'll get back to you. And if the Spirit moves, God, then I will actually do what you tell me. But you probably don't mean what you're saying, so it's probably just the Hebrew there that I'm misunderstanding. When you say sacrifice him at this place, it probably really means just give him a pat on the head. And so Abraham ignored what God said and didn't do anything. No, that is not what happened. But that's what we do, right? Oh, God, let me pray about that. Let me think about it. If the Spirit leads me, you know, that's not really what he meant. But Abraham was told to sacrifice his only son, and it says early the next morning. Not even a couple days later, early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. He had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, and he set out for the place God had told him about. Immediately, God says, do it, and Abraham says, I'm doing it. An example of immediate obedience. That's what he was to his son and to his family, and it carried on and on and on, because Abraham says, if God says it, I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter how I feel. It doesn't even matter if it makes complete sense. If this is what God says to do, then my job is to obey immediately. Not think about it, not pray about it, not wait, but to do it. Then we see here the second thing is that Abraham was an example of incredible faith. Now, these two are related. I firmly believe that you need to have faith if you're going to obey, because God is not a normal, boring God. And when you look at the Bible, when you look at Jesus, how the example of him and how we're supposed to live like him, you know, there's nothing that says sit back and show up on Sunday and you check your box and you're good. It's way bigger than that. And so we need to have big faith. And Abraham had big faith. He trusted God despite the fact that God was telling him that his only son was going to be killed. And that's what we see here in verses 4 to 8. It says, on the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. And here's the other thing, too. And I'm not going to speculate because the Bible doesn't say it, but I'm going to speculate a little bit. But it was a three-day walk, a three-day journey that Abraham had to sit and think, this is it. This is it. These are my last 3 days with my son, my only son, the one I love. And yet, he went forward. He said, we will worship and we will come back to you. And we'll come back to the word worship in a little bit. It says, Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. Then he himself carried the fire and the knife. So he had a torch or something like that, maybe flint, and then the knife. And it said, as the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Abraham, Father? Yes, my son, Abraham replied. The fire and the wood are here. Wood are here, not wooder. The fire and the wood are here, Isaac said. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? I don't know how old Isaac was here at this point. He's young, probably pre-teenage, based on some other things we see happen. So, I mean, imagine your kid saying, Dad, Mom, I see this and that, but where's the lamb? Knowing that for the last 3 days, you're going to be killing this son as an act of worship to God. And what was Abraham's answer? It wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't, who knows? It wasn't, we'll figure something out. It was, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. Abraham was so full of faith that he's like, well, God's going to work this out. If God told me to do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go. I'm going to obey. And he is going to provide. He is going to work it out. And maybe that means that Isaac is going to be sacrificed and God's going to give me another son. Or maybe that means that and actually if you look in Hebrews, it seems to imply in Hebrews 11:9 that Abraham thought that God was going to raise Isaac from the dead. And that was Abraham's thought. Like, oh, of course, because God will just raise him from the dead. Duh. Because Abraham was a man of incredible faith. Abraham says, I want to be an example. He was an example to his family, to his sons, to their children, their daughters. And I don't want to just make it sons. I mean, to the generations to come. And so you have this man that is considered the model, the pinnacle point of the Jewish, Hebrew, Israelite faith. And he was an example of immediate obedience. He was an example of incredible faith because all of these things are being picked up by his kids and his grandkids. And their kids are picking up pieces of what they get from their dads and their granddad and going on and grandma and all these pieces are being left behind. And so he was an example of incredible faith. And then the last thing is that he was an example of unwavering worship. Of unwavering worship. This, to him, wasn't an act of, oh, I need to kill this boy. It wasn't an act of anger towards God, which is crazy. This wasn't a, oh, crap, I better do this or God's going to, like, smote me or something. No. This was an act of worship because God said, I want you to give me your son as a burnt offering, as a sacrifice. I want it to be an act of worship. And so what does Abraham do? He does it. It says in verse 9, when they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there. And an altar is something we don't know too much about unless maybe you grew up in like a Baptist church and you had the altar up front. But an altar was a place designed for worship. It was a place designed for worship. And there he arranged the wood on it. Then he bound his son and picked him up and laid him on the altar. And that picking up at the top of Mount Moriah was considered the Moriah carry. But he picked him up and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Just to clarify here, Abraham is going to worship God with one of the costliest things he will ever do. And if you read later, you actually find out David talks about how worship needs to cost us something. And when we worship, and it's not just singing, but of everything that we do, it should be costly. Because if it doesn't cost anything, it's like someone giving you a present and saying, hey, I thought of you. You're 50. Wow, you're really old. You know, here's a gift. I found it on the side of the road. Or if I said, hey, my kids went without food. We stopped eating for the last 3 weeks so that we could give you this gift. Which one has a little bit more value? I wouldn't do that, by the way, you know. But which one has more value? The one that costs more. And so Abraham is about to worship God with the costliest, with a lot of cost to himself personally. He takes out the knife to slay his son. He didn't stop and wait. He was ready to do it. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, here I am, he replied. Don't lay a hand on the boy. Don't do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God. And this word means that you worship, you revere, you realize that God is incredible and amazing and worthy of worship because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. And I think maybe here with worship, Abraham is kind of has maybe that same attitude that Job had. And if you remember the story of Job where he basically lost everything. And what was Job's response? It wasn't, oh God, you're awful. His response was, you know what? Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will return. So blessed be the name of the Lord. Translation, I had nothing when I was born. Everything I have is from God. And if God chooses to take it away, I am still going to worship him because he is worthy of worship. And that is the example that we see in Abraham here too, saying, I'm willing to sacrifice my son because God called me to do it. Now understand, we're looking at a different time, a different era, literally the voice of God booming from heaven saying, Abraham, Abraham. So, you know, don't make it a 21st century issue like, oh, God wants me to start. The things have changed, and there's the New Testament and some other issues there. But the principle being that he was willing to worship, and it cost him dearly. But then God, of course, as Abraham knew was going to happen because of his faith, he looked up and there he saw a ram caught by his horns, went over, took the ram, sacrificed as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. If you were little, you might have sung the song in Sunday school someday in church. Jehovah Jireh, my... Anyway, that's what the Hebrew is, Jehovah Jireh, which actually is more like Yahweh Yireh. But anyway, it doesn't roll off the tongue quite as fun in preschool. So, but that's what this is called, the Lord will provide. And this, to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. So you have this man, Abraham, who was an example to his son, an example in so many ways. And I love, by the way, this idea totally came from our creative team meeting, which was like 3 months ago. And I wanted to talk about legacy. I want to talk about this idea. And Abraham was shared. I'm like, how cool is this? And I didn't realize how cool it was until just the last week, really putting all the pieces together about how Abraham was such an example to his son. And he was called, you know, as you go through the Old Testament, you'll see them talk about the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. When he talks about God, oh, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Jacob. And I'm telling you, read through. You can do a quick word search later on YouVersion, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. You will find that that is how God came to be known to the nations around. That was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because Abraham was this example. This is an example of obedience, of faith, and of worship. And as fathers, as mothers, as aunts, uncles, guardians, protectors, examples, we need to be an example of those because the next generation is picking it up. The next generation is picking up the things that we are leaving behind. And so the point is this. Try this parenting hack. We talked about a parenting hack a couple weeks ago about discipline. This is another one. Be the example. Be the example of loving Jesus. Up in Ignition, the kids are talking about the difference between the words and the actions. And how you can say it all you want, but until you live it, it really makes a difference. And so be the example of loving Jesus. And here's an interesting passage in Genesis 18:19. You don't have to turn there. But it was talking about Abraham, and this is what God said. For I have chosen Abraham. God chose him as the leader of the people, as the father of the nation, so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. And so Abraham is kind of marked as this man that says he is going to be one that's going to direct his kids and his household and everything, so that then they will direct their kids and their household and continue on this legacy, continue leaving these footprints, leaving these pieces of themselves that will be picked up by the next generation. And that is why, one of the reasons why Abraham was chosen. Well, I want you to understand something here. First of all, Abraham was a human being. And as a human being, like you, like me, he was not perfect. But I want you to realize, and this was so cool because I didn't realize this as we were planning it and came over the last week. I'm like, wow, this is incredible. And I want to talk about what they pick up. Because your kids, your aunts, your nieces and nephews as an aunt or uncle, your grandchildren, all of these, they're picking up what you're leaving behind. And again, you can say, no, they don't get that. They do. And this week in your prime groups, you're going to have a chance to kind of discuss some of the fun things, because there are probably things, especially now, maybe as a parent or as you've gotten older, you're like, that was totally my mom. I just sounded like my mom. You know, so you have a chance to have some fun with that. But here's some things that are picked up. And this is just kind of mind-blowing. First of all, your kids might pick up your wisdom. They might pick up your wisdom. And we will see here that Abraham did something that was wise, and Isaac years later, picked up that wisdom. So here's these passages. We're going to kind of fly through these. You can chew on them a little bit more in prime groups this week. It says, now listen, this is Abraham. So at that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his forces, just a couple guys from another nation, said to Abraham, God is with you in everything you do. He was an example, but that's a separate point. Now swear to me here before God that you will not deal falsely with me or my children or my descendants. Show to me in the country where you now reside as a foreigner the same kindness I have shown to you. So there's this other nation that says, look, we see that God is with you. You're here. You're in our nation. Please, can we make a treaty? Because we don't want, like, your God to be causing problems with us. And there was wisdom there because he could have said, no, we're just going to fight it out. There's no reason not to. They recognize God, so let's deal with this. So Abraham said, I swear it. And then a couple of verses later, it says, so that place was called Beersheba because the two men swore an oath there. So this outside nation, or this nation around him says, look, we see God's with you. We don't want to have trouble. Let's make a treaty. It makes sense. There's no reason to start a fight. There's no reason to start a war over something when they are even saying, we want to respect you and honor you. So, Isaac, years later, chapters later, says, meanwhile, Abimelech, a different guy, by the way, it's a title, it's a long story, had come to him from Gerar with Ahuzah, his personal advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his forces. Isaac asked him, why have you come to me since you were hostile to me and sent me away? They answered. So there was a tension there between these two nations, these two groups of people. And so they answered, we saw clearly that the Lord was with you. So we said, there ought to be a sworn agreement between us and you. Let us make a treaty with you, and so that you will do us no harm, just as we did not do you harm, but always treated you well and sent you away peacefully. And now you are blessed by the Lord. So they saw the same thing in Isaac that this group of people saw in Abraham generations or years earlier. And so then it says, Isaac then made a feast for them, and they ate and drank. Early the next morning, the men swore an oath to each other. Then Isaac sent them on their way. They each went away, and they went away peacefully. So here you've got Abraham making a treaty with an outside nation, and obviously it's got to be a point where Isaac is older, much older, so maybe decades later, the same opportunity presents itself to Isaac, and he remembers. He reflects and says, I want to be what my dad was. And again, he's probably not like, well, what did Abraham do here? But just the idea that legacy had been passed on, and so that Isaac picked up the wisdom of his dad and did the exact same thing, the right thing, in that situation. So they pick up your wisdom. The second thing is that they pick up your wrongs. They pick up your failures. And you never fail, so you're okay. But I fail, and my kids pick up on it. And I think it is unfortunate, just part of who we are, is that the negative things seem to, I don't know, they seem to stick deeper than the positive things, which means we need to work harder to be an example. So we have Abraham, and this is just crazy that this is, you talk about a generation and an issue of learning and leaving a legacy and the good things and the bad things. So Abraham, here going on in Genesis 12, says Abraham was about to enter Egypt. He said to his wife Sarai, this is his wife Sarah. Now, they don't have Isaac at the time. There are no kids in the picture yet. He said to his wife Sarai, I know what a beautiful woman you are. When the Egyptians see you, they're going into Egypt, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but let you live. So he's worried, you know what's going to happen? They're going to see how hot you are and be like, I want her. Abraham's out of the picture. Oh, you're unmarried? Why don't you come into my home and be my wife? So that's what he's worried about. So then he says, say you are my sister. Say you are my sister so that I will be treated well for your sake and my life will be spared because of you. So he says, honey, lie to everyone and tell them you're just my sister. And then they won't kill me because there's no threat there. So when Abraham came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that Sarai was a very beautiful woman. And when Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his palace. He treated Abram well for her sake, and Abram acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, and camels. But the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household because of Abram's wife Sarai. So Pharaoh summoned Abram. What have you done to me? He said, why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she was my sister so that I took her to be my wife. Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. So Pharaoh, God basically said, Pharaoh, you know, you've got some other man's wife, inflicted diseases. And Pharaoh's like, what's the deal? And Abraham finds out, or Pharaoh finds out that Abraham lied to him about his wife, Sarai. Okay, so generations later, Isaac wasn't even around at that point, by the way. He didn't even exist. Didn't even know he was going to be a part of the situation or the issue. Then later, so we have men of that place asked him, Isaac is around another nation. It says, when the men of that place asked him about his wife, he said, she is my sister. Because he was afraid to say, she is my wife. He thought the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebekah because she is beautiful. The same exact thing. And we're not, it's like, you see how, like, I don't know, maybe that's normal for you. Like, oh, is that your wife? No, it's my sister. But apparently, here's the exact same thing. When Isaac had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked down from a window and saw Isaac caressing his wife, Rebekah. Wait a second, what's going on here? I thought she was your sister. So Abimelech summoned Isaac and said, she's really your wife. Why did you say she is my sister? Isaac answered him, because I thought I might lose my life on account of her. Then Abimelech said, he was the leader of the Philistines, what is it you have done to us? One of the men might have slept with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. So you've got this issue. Abraham has this problem. He's leaving a legacy. He's causing, like, there's something that maybe Isaac learned or heard about. Oh, this is what your dad did. And he picked up, even though Abraham was sure, he wasn't even around then. But he picked up little pieces of this. And so Isaac duplicated the exact same problem. And then finally, what do they pick up? They pick up your worship. You know, as an example, they're picking up the things you do, the wrong things you do, and the worship. Are you an example of worship? Abraham, in Genesis chapter 12, it says that the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So what did Abraham do? He built an altar, which was a sign of worship there to the Lord, who had appeared to him. From there he went on toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So right away Abraham's response was, I'm going to worship. And so what does his son do? Isaac? Later, years later, decades later. From there he went up to Beersheba. That night the Lord appeared to him and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. To Isaac, again, he's talking to. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you and will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant, Abraham. Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. There he pitched his tent, and there his servants dug a well. So Isaac, what is his response? When he hears something powerful, what's his response? He worships God. And so as parents, as examples, as adults, as leaders, as older brothers, older sisters, people are picking up what we're leaving behind. They're picking up little pieces of you. And in all of these things, it was an issue of what was going on in their lives and just hints and things that were left behind and things that were like, oh, nobody's even going to notice that. But they do, because they pick up a piece of everything. And in that video clip, I'm sure it was Moriarty, by the way, spoiler, I'm sure Moriarty thought, oh, there's no way they'll find me, because I wiped my feet. I was clear. I was able to get past, and there weren't any traces, but on a microscopic level, there were traces of all the places he'd been, and they could put it together and find where this kidnapping took place. And we think the same things. We got to be careful, because these little pieces, however microscopic they are infecting, affecting, defecting, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, our kids. And that can be good and bad. That can be good and bad. And that's the important thing to understand and to remember, is that we can leave a legacy. We can leave an example to our kids. Well, no, not Ken. Forget that. Ken is not the word, because we are. You are leaving a legacy. The question is, what kind of legacy are you leaving? And for Abraham, the legacy that he left was a man of worship and failure and wisdom. And he was an example to his son of faith. I mean, just all of these things are so incredible. And it was God used this man and his son and his sons and their family and then his son. And you trail on down to Moses. And then you get on further down and you're looking at David. And you get on further down and there's this guy, Jesus, who was a descendant of Abraham. In terms of his lineage, he was the son of God. And that's a whole other story. We talked about that a couple years ago at Christmas time. But the fact that this example was something that has been carried on and on and on and on. And you read through the Old Testament, and it's just full of people failing and succeeding, and the next generation picking up on it. So whether you're a parent or not, again, whatever your role is, like, you are an example. So the point is, be the example of loving Jesus. When you do something right, have conversations with your kids. Hey, do you know why we did this? Do you know why this happened? It's great to be able to discuss that. I mean, the ATU Pack is an opportunity for you to spend time with your kids and talking about what's going right. And when you do something wrong, be humble enough to say, I messed up there. That was wrong. Let them know that it was wrong so they don't go back and say, oh, I guess that was okay. And when it comes to worship, being that example of Jesus, being that example that says, you know, I am real. I love God. And when we have something, we say, thank you, God, for giving this to me. When we don't, we say, God, can you help me? When you get us through this, I mean, praying and just all of that. And we talk, that's the theme, obviously, throughout the series, is praying together as a family is a big start. But being that example is so important. And so I want to talk about this in 1 Corinthians 11. We looked at this the very first week when we talked about the cornerstone and how Jesus needs to be the cornerstone of your family. Jesus needs to be that keystone, that is, the most important part, the part that holds the whole thing together. And we look at this verse that says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. This is Paul, the planter of many churches, talking to the church in Corinth that he planted and says, look, follow my example, not because I'm worth anything, but because I am following the example of Jesus. Because I'm following Jesus, then I'm worthy of following. And when I'm not following Jesus, I'm not. But he says to be that example. And as parents, as examples, I encourage you to do that same with your kids. If your kids are following you because you're a nice guy, because she's got a lot of friends, because they give me stuff, then if that's what you're known for, I mean, those are the pieces that are being picked up. Those are the pieces that they're taking away. Or do you want them to know, wow, man, our meals were never really that tasty, but I know that Grandma loved Jesus. She couldn't cook, but she loved Jesus. And so we ate her food and smiled because we know she loved Jesus. And as a parent, as a mom, as a dad, aunt and uncle, I mean, be the example of loving Jesus. And so this creates, and for prime group leaders, you might want to write these down because you're going to be discussing them at length. This creates what I'm calling legacy tensions. Because when we leave that legacy, when we leave those pieces of us that our kids are picking up, it creates tensions. And a tension is just that. I mean, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, there's a lot up here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guitars. And every one of the strings on those guitars, and I think there's like 6? Yeah, 6 strings. They're under tension. They're being pulled from both ends. And if one end wasn't pulling, it wouldn't work. But they're under tension. And that means that there's nothing right or wrong about either end. It's kind of the both. It's a tension. Sometimes you have to swing one way. Sometimes you have to swing the other way. And I want to look at some of these things as parents that are tensions that we need to recognize as we leave little pieces of us that are being picked up by our kids, where are we on these tensions? The first part of the first tension is always had time for others, right? We want our kids to see the importance of loving our neighbor as ourselves. Jesus has told us that. We need to make sure that we are giving them that example and saying, oh, well, somebody has a need. Sorry, we're watching TV. Forget you. No. We want to be the example and say, oh, they have a need. We're going to put down what we're doing for the sake of others. We're going to give up some of our own money, some of our own things for the sake of feeding a child in Oaxaca. We're going to be that example of always having time for others. The tension, though, is that are we also teaching our kids that they never had time, mom and dad never had time for me? So there's a tension there because your responsibility as a parent is to be for you, there for your kids, to be the example, to love them. And so we've got a problem because we can't swing to the end of saying, oh, well, we're always helping other people so that our kids are like, you know what, my parents could care less about me. Everybody else was more important than me. And I'll tell you, that kind of stuff happens, and I'll tell you, that kind of stuff happens with people like me. Because people like me that serve in ministry roles, I mean, the wreckage, the damage passed behind of pastors is horrendous. It's hideous. It's ugly. And I might offend you because you might try to send me a text on Friday on my day off, and I will not answer it. Because my family is too important to me and to Jesus. And I don't want to say, oh, hey, sorry, kids. I know we were going to do this, but I got this text and this person needs me. I'm going to say, they're going to have to wait because my family is the priority. And we need to make sure we balance that tension. You know what? And there are times, there have been times where like, wow, this is a very serious situation, guys. We're going to have to deal with this and I will come back and we will make it up. But it's a tension. It's a tension as parents. Do you say, I'm always having time for others, but I never have time? Will you drop things for the sake of other people, but never drop things for the sake of your kids? It's a tension. Somewhere we need to find the balance in there. And sometimes it swings a little bit one way, and sometimes it swings a little bit the other way. They're both good. We just need to find out where that fits. The second legacy tension is showed me the importance of hard work. I think, yeah. Showed me the importance of hard work. Dude, life is hard. Work, by the very nature of the word, means that it's work. And I don't know what's going on. Like, obviously, we've got technology we have right now. I was just talking to someone about this the other day. I mean, the difference between the oven and the microwave and how everything's instant now. And once upon a time, if you wanted to eat dinner, it might take you an hour just to cook it in the oven. And generations earlier, you had to make a fire and all that kind of stuff. And now we want it right now. We want everything instantly. We think everything's going to be easy. But work is work. If it wasn't work, then you need to change the name. And somehow we expect work to be easy. And so as parents, we need to be teaching our kids, hey, hard work is important. You can't just sit back and expect everyone to give everything to you. Because Jesus has called us to give up our lives for the sake of other people, to give up our comforts for the sake of following him. And so it's going to take work. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. We also need to make sure, though, that in the process of showing our kids the importance of hard work, that we don't get to the end where we say we never showed them the importance of Sabbath, the importance of rest. Because rest is just as biblical. And the importance of saying we're going to take time and focus on physical refreshment, like sleeping. You need sleep. Workaholics, that's a problem because you need to rest. And it comes back to the last week, you know, the last legacy tension is giving time to your kids, but showing your kids the importance of rest, the importance of Sabbath. Now, the tension is you don't want to be like, oh, every day is a Sabbath. Sit back and do nothing. Wait for my check to come in the mail. No, it's a tension. But it's an important tension that we need to make sure we're showing our kids, we're being an example of hard work, and we're also being an example of taking time to rest because we need it. God created us that way on purpose. And that's even rest from ministry. God didn't need the seventh day. He didn't create for 6 days and go, oh, man, I am done. I am totally taking a nap. I'm going to do a binge watch on Netflix, and I'm going to be good in a couple days. No, he took rest, it says in the Bible, as an example for us. So, tension. Showed me the importance of hard work. Hard work is important. Rest is important. We need to find the spot in between where we are managing that tension. The next legacy tension taught me to be real with my emotions. We want to teach people real. That's one of our core values, is authenticity as a church. Because being real, there's no reason to be fake. There's no reason to lie. I mean, all being fake does is create lies and walls and closets to hide things in. And you can't deal with anything when it's hidden, when you're being fake, when you're wearing a mask. So we need to be real. We want to be an example of being real. Let your kids see you cry. It's okay. Let them know that something is breaking your heart. Let them see you happy. It's okay. Let them know that you're enjoying something. God created emotions. So we want to teach our kids the importance of being real and not hiding things and not being fake and not just trying to put on the face to meet the crowd. But we want to be careful that we're not teaching our kids to let our emotions control us. Oh, I'm just being real. I think you're an idiot. Sorry, just the way I'm feeling. Just being real. No, shut your mouth. Don't let your emotions control you. Why didn't you clean this room? What is your problem? You're nothing but a piece of trash. That sounds to me like emotions controlling, and that is not what Jesus wants us to do. We want to control our emotions. Not being fake, but, I mean, we talked about this 2 weeks ago when we watched the Craig Rochelle video. Slow to speak, quick to listen, slow to become angry, not in that order. And the importance of not allowing our emotions to control us. Being real, not hiding and not being fake, but also saying we need to make sure our emotions are controlling us. And it's a tension, because we want to be real, but we want to be overcome by all of our emotions. The next tension. They taught me the importance of discipline. We talked about discipline like 4 or 5 weeks ago in this series. The parenting hack number one. Discipline is important. Discipline as individuals. You know what? And I love that quote, that, and I'm going to mess it up now. But Craig Rochelle said something that extraordinary people do what regularly what ordinary people don't do regularly, or something close to that. But, you know, there's personal self-discipline. Things, if you want to spend time reading God's Word, you might have to get up earlier. If you want to have a job, you might have to work at it. Like, there's going to be things where it's going to require discipline and hard work. And as a parent, we might show them, no, this is wrong, and we're going to correct them on the path. If you remember the duck races? We're going to discipline them. We need to show them that this is life. You can't just kind of go on and do your own thing. There's rules, there's values, there's God's standards. There's Jesus as an example. And so we might need to say, hey, that is incorrect. We might need to correct them physically. We might need to correct them in terms of an attitude. But we need to teach our kids the importance of discipline. However, the tension is that we need to make sure that we never show them the importance of grace. Because you and I are in this building, or at least have the hope of something that matters because of grace. Because Jesus says, you don't deserve what I'm about to give you, and so I'm going to give you my life. That is grace. I'm going to give you my son, Jesus. You don't deserve it. And so we need to teach kids the importance of grace. And there's times where we're going to say, you know what, this is what you should have done, but we're going to show some grace here. And we want, if you look at the Bible, if you look at Jesus' example, every time he ran, almost every time he ran in with the Pharisees were saying, this needs to be condemned. They need to go down. And Jesus says, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pick them up. I'm going to carry them. I'm going to do something. I'm going to demonstrate grace. And so we need to find that tension there. Grace is important. If it's all grace and they don't learn the importance of spiritual disciplines, personal discipline, I mean, all those things, it's all tied together, and it gets mangled and messed up. It's hard. It's a tension. But if we want to make sure we're leaving Jesus behind, we're going to have to try to manage that tension. The next one, taught me to be a good steward of money. Stewardship. We are called to be managers of God's money. We are. It's important. We need to value it. We need to save it sometimes. We need to give it sometimes. We need to whatever with it. You know, spend it. That's the other thing. I knew there was something else there. We need to spend it sometimes. And that's good. And we want to teach our kids to be good stewards of money. However, we want to make sure that we don't teach them that they never need to have faith for God to provide. Because the tension here is that, oh, well, we've got it all figured out, and so we don't need God to show up. We don't need God to come through because we've got it figured out. We've got our savings account. We've got this line checked off. We've got this issue. We don't need God to show up. And sometimes we need to do things that are so extraordinarily faithful, like Abraham, that God has to show up. And again, it's not just to be stupid. That's not wise stewardship. That's not good managing. But maybe God says, here's a need, and it's beyond your means to do it. And we say, you know what, if God is calling us to do it, we're going to do it and wait for God to provide. And that is something, honestly, stewardship is so important, and faith is so important. I don't know. This is tough because they're so both very essential. But make sure that we're not swinging so far one way that we miss the other side. It's attention. And then the last one here, it showed me the importance of family. One of our core values of the church is family. We build everything around the basis of family. It's important. Your family is more important than your job. Your family is more important than your ministry. Your family is the most important thing next to your relationship with Christ. And if we're going to break down family, it's Jesus, then spouse, then family, then everything else. And so it's very important that we show the importance of family. Teach our kids that they matter. And these are, again, these kind of wrap together a little bit, like going back to the very first one. We want to show our kids the importance of having time for others, but also the importance of time for them. So the importance of family. Family is so important. Your family. However, the tension there is that we unintentionally show them that church is not important. And what I'm getting here, and again, we have all seen, I'm sure, if you've grown up in church, you've seen, like, as long as you are here on Sunday, God doesn't care one bit about the rest of your life, but you better show up on Sundays. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about saying, hey, we think family is important, but we need to be part of the body of Christ. And we need to make sure we're demonstrating that example of being part of His body. And whether that's at MC3 on Sunday mornings, I don't care. I'm saying that it's something as a follower of Jesus we need. And so we need to make sure that we're not saying family is so important that we have family worship every week and we never show up with the body of Christ. Family worship being a very polite, nice excuse for actually not doing what Jesus has called us to do as being part of His church. So it's attention. We just need to make sure. And we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago. You know where I am on vacation on Sunday mornings? Not in church. Why? Well, because I don't think church is important. No, absolutely not. Because we actually have this conversation. Hey, kids, it's Sunday and we're not going to church. And do you know why? Because right now we're going to take time as a family together. And there's stuff I can't even begin to unpack in my head, baggage that I've got when it comes to showing up on Sundays. But there's a reason for that. But we also are very quick to say, this isn't because church isn't important. This matters. And, you know, we've had other Sundays where we love watching and we try to watch something at home. Because those things matter. So it's attention. It's attention, it's attention, it's attention. Importance of family, importance of church. Just make sure that we don't swing one way so far that we miss the other. So these are all tensions that we have in terms of leaving a legacy behind, being the example of following Jesus. And I don't have the answers for you. I'm not giving you the answers. I think the only answer is those last two words. And that's loving Jesus. We need to focus everything that we have on loving Jesus. And you can take parenting classes and learn techniques and tips and all that. There's nothing wrong with that. But if we do all those things and don't get those two words right, then it doesn't matter. Loving Jesus, we need to be the example of that. That's what God has called us to do. We need to find a balance in those tensions. You're going to have a chance again in your prime groups this week. It's going to be some good discussion. Talk about it. Because they're hard. How do you manage those two things? And some of you might have some experience and wisdom in an area to say, oh, this is one of the things we've learned. This is a tip that we learned to help the church, to help the body of Christ, your fellow believers, followers of Jesus, to be able to manage those tensions together. But the point is, we need to be that example. So let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. I thank you for the example of Abraham. And he did things well. He was full of faith. He was a man of obedience. And we can see that that has continued on for generations. We also saw that he was a man who failed. And that this is a room full of people that are failures. And I thank you that you're never done with us when we fail. That you always restore us and bring us back to the spot where at this moment, right now, it's a clean slate. And so we can choose from now to be the example of loving you. And I pray that you would help us to do that. I pray for these tensions. And these are just some of them. There's many more, God, I know, that we all have to deal with. But I just pray in these areas, you would give us wisdom when it comes time that we need to go one side and maybe move a little bit to the other side and maybe move back a little bit. Give us the wisdom as we leave a legacy, as there are kids, as those that we are caring for, as those that we are around, are picking up little pieces of us. And I pray, God, that we are leaving Jesus behind so that they have something that matters to pick up. It's in your name we pray. Amen.